The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
What's going on, people? Welcome to Throwdown, episode 476. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Stop, people! What's going on?
Chris Seeley.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Carlos Romero.
Yo, yo.
Brett Murdoch.
Wait, what? Deja vu. What's up?
And Richard Bailey Jr.
What's up, everybody?
All right, man, we're back with another one. As usual, Brian will probably join us an hour later because daylight saving time happens every year. And
real quick to interject, our audio on our end, not yours, Tony, is a little bit high on the gain.
Ooh.
So maybe lower
a little bit lower. I could do that. Vamp it a little bit. Manny, why isn't the government getting rid of daylight saving time, but they could get rid of TikTok, which I'm for. Get rid of TikTok. Get rid of that fucking Chinese PSYOP. But
I don't, to be honest, I don't actually fully know. I feel like that just, it becomes a talking point when they want to get reelected and stuff, like, hey, we're going to get rid of this thing you don't like, you know?
Yeah. But by the way, real quick,
it's kind of like, I feel like a lot of times, like, when it comes to, like, you know, like when elections and stuff are about to happen or an electoral year happens, it's kind of like when the mayor of a city wants to get reelected and they all of a sudden start fixing up all the roads.
Yeah.
You know, to sort of be like, oh, hey, we do things. We roads are all fixed up. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yo, Carlos, how's the game right now?
Yeah, Manny sounds good.
Yep, I just lowered it just a little bit, you know. All right, first up, I want to give a huge shout-out to my man's C. Iverson, 29, in the chat. For you guys who don't know, that is my eldest nephew. So shout-out to him. I gave him a shout-out on the last show, you know, when we were talking about Akira Toriyama, you know, because that motherfucker loves Dragon Ball as much as me, even though we're like fucking 20 years apart, you know. It's crazy. Generational, man. And also, if you haven't already, I took that clip of us talking about Akira Toriyama. It was 12 minutes. We, like, 13 minutes or something. Like, yo, that's a good clip. You know, that was our way of honoring him. So go check that out. It was a good talk.
So we resurrected TD clips for a little bit there.
Yeah, accidentally resurrected it, you know.
I feel like when those moments come along and we have those really good, like, moments, like, on the fan, I definitely think, you know, just doing a little throwdown clip on there still, you know, still viable.
Yeah, for sure. So that was good. It was a good talk too. It was actually a good history lesson that we kind of gave people inadvertently, you know, learning how all that happened. But yeah, anyway, we're back with another one. This week, some interesting stuff happened, but it wasn't as crazy as last week, obviously. But the first story, we're going to get into what it is, and then I got to do my shit talking, man, because I got to call out the hypocrisy in the industry, you know? But let's get into it, man. So a trailer for Spider-Man multiplayer was leaked, Insomniac Spider-Man, you know? And I'm going to read this from, and apologies for reading it from this site, by the way, Kotaku. They're in all other sorts of trouble, but we're not talking about that, you know? Oh, man, Kotaku doesn't stop with the bullshit. Earlier today, a trailer for an unannounced and reportedly canceled online Spider-Man spinoff game from Insomniac leaked onto Reddit and social media. The trailer showcases multiple players taking on the roles of various famous spider heroes while exploring New York City and other universes. In the leaked trailer for Spider-Man The Great Web, that was the name, we hear Yuri Lowenthal as Peter Parker introducing the concept of the game, explaining that, here's a quote, sometimes you can swing at it as a lone wolf, but you're way better off with some friends. He also worries that the evil Sinister Six group, if we know who the Sinister Six is, are ramping up their activities and becoming more dangerous and quote unquote savage. I don't think I'm going to be enough this time, guys, but together we might just be. So, you know, multiverse bullshit. So the trailer has Spider-Gwen, Spider-Man 2099, and Venom, and, you know, multiverse nonsense. So, yeah, so that got leaked.
It didn't, and the thing about it is it didn't just get leaked.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the hypocrisy.
That was
a part, and that had showed up a while ago. That was a part of the large leak that we found out a whole bunch of behind the scenes information. That was one of them.
Okay, I can't hold myself back. I got to call it hypocrisy. Okay, because you guys remember when that big Insomniac leak happened, most gaming sites did not report on it because they're like, oh no, because people's public information was displayed. They ruined a bunch of games, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, huh, it's kind of interesting given how you guys report on every other leak, but that was the industry narrative. Throwdown never went with that narrative, by the way. The only reason we didn't report on it when it happened is because we're on vacation. But the first episode back this year, that was the main story. We talked about those fucking leaks, right? So when this happened, you know me, man, I took a Twitter. I'm like, oh, so now it's okay to talk about Insomniac leaks? People are like, oh, no, that's different. You know, people's personal information was revealed. I'm like, yeah, but this leak came from that leak. What's the difference? And you saw the goalpost moving. Oh, no, it's different because, you know, we were spoiled about upcoming games. This was a canceled game. Like, that makes a difference. Like, that makes a difference. Get the fuck out of here. This came from the same leak that you guys said we weren't supposed to talk about. But now we could talk about it, you know? Nah, it's fucking bullshit, man. You know?
Well, I find it funny that these people didn't have a problem talking all about the Rockstar leaks or mm-hmm. the Capcom leaks or the CD Projekt Red leaks that actually had employee information, including their salaries and all that stuff. They had no problem talking about that. This was, oh no, can't talk about Insomniac.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? You know? And again, like I said, with the original one, we're like, oh, you know, we can't talk about these leaks because people's personal information was disclosed. Okay. Don't talk about that personal information. Right? The game leaks are fair game to talk about. You know? You do it all the time. You guys do it all the time. You know, but suddenly it's 3 months later. Now we could talk about it. You know? Come on, man. It's fucking bullshit, bro. You know? So I had to call that out. Anyway, would you get, if you guys, the trailer was taken down, by the way. So for you guys who did see it, what would you think of it?
I mean, it was interesting. I mean, I remember a while ago saying, how do you make a multiplayer Spider-Man game? Oh, you just literally, you know, cut a hole in the Spider-Verse and then all the other characters that you see there are all people, you know, characters.
Yeah.
Are all, you know, things. And to be honest, they actually did sort of set this up with that one, what did they call it? There was a Spider-Verse type of mission within the Spider-Man 2, you know, where you sort of meet that one lady, you know, that bartender lady, and, you know, you're collecting those spider bots. So, yeah, the idea is like, okay, so now it's like, what if you were playing with your friend as like Miles or any other characters? I mean, it sounds interesting to me, but I feel like at the same time, it's like, Having them essentially attempt to stick in like what, you know, it's probably going to be end up being like the looter shooter type of idea, right? Where you're constantly fighting the same villains over and over again in an effort to unlock things, right?
Yeah.
Like it's like the Suicide Squad deal. It's kind of like the Arkham Origins. What was the name of that? The Gotham Knights.
Yeah, that bullshit.
It's amazing how all these motherfuckers had the same ideas at the same time. It's all the same shit, all recycled around each other. The same stuff. All of them attempting to try to do this stuff. And it sucks that it's it stinks because a lot of these companies wasted so much time on them. On a, like this fruitless effort.
Yeah, I mean, I want to get to that in a bit, but I got to give the devil his due right now, man. Kotaku reported on this story back in December 19th last year. They here's the list of every game. So they at least did their due diligence as reporters. You can't just be like, oh, I'm a reporter, but I'm not going to report on that. Mm-hmm. Well, come on, bro. You know, so you know, and Manny, look at this right here. 2024, Spider-Man 2 multiplayer game. It's right there. This is from December 19th, 2023. Mm-hmm. So this was already known. You know, it came. Mm-hmm. This trailer came from that leak. So you can't be telling me that they're two separate things. No, we learned about that from that fucking leak that you didn't want us to talk about. You know? Oh, by the way, I found it funny, man. Keeping it real. When I posted that on Twitter, a lot of people were tagging Greg Miller. Didn't say nothing, though, because he was the main guy. Oh, I'm not going to report on this. I'm not going to report on this because this is a breach of violation. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, bro.
Yeah, well, now he's talking about it, right?
Talking about it now. And it's from the same fucking leak from last year, bro. Come on, man.
I think a lot of that situation is them not trying to piss off Sony.
Yeah.
Or piss off PlayStation.
Let's be real. Yeah.
I think that's what it all is. I think it's because Greg Miller is like, you know, he's, you know, Mr. PlayStation, you know. I mean, he might have even gotten a thing from one of his boys that you know, up top at Sony saying, "Hey, listen, there's all this shit that's going out there. Please don't say anything about it, you know," and maybe obviously put out the thing. Oh, hey, because there's a lot of people's information. We don't want people, you know, looking at all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, and I think everybody else
in the industry followed suit, or most people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I could definitely see that as a reasoning to try to hold back information. But yeah, what makes this different than what happened with CD Projekt Red? What makes this any different than what happened with Capcom? What makes this different to this happening to a lot of different companies, you know, that these breaches have had, that have affected?
There is no difference. The only difference. Let's be real here. And Rich, I'll let you go next. If this happened to Xbox, Microsoft, I guarantee every website would have reported on it. Every one of them, you know. But yeah, Rich, what are your thoughts on the trailer and the blatant hypocrisy going on here?
Well, I agree 1,000% that the hypocrisy is absolutely absurd. As for the trailer itself, to me, this looked like this was very, very far in development. I mean, the responses I've seen online is people, there's some anger as to why it's not coming out, because it doesn't look like there is a lot of, I don't know how much work they still had to do on this when it got canceled, but it looks to me like this clearly was like ready to launch like soon.
Yeah.
And the thing is that I understand they spent a lot of money on this and it got canceled, but I think we all know some of this content is probably going to be in Spider-Man 3, because I imagine they spent a lot of even more money on that game. They're going to try to use what they can from the assets to put it in this other game too.
Yeah. And, you know, like you said, you know, this looked finished, and right here, again, posted on in December of last year, 2024, Spider-Man game, multiplayer. So it was supposed to come out this year. But now the big question is, why did they cancel it? Something that was that effectively looked finished. You know, this is where we go into speculation mode. But it could be because now they kind of see the tide turning when it comes to these live service games. You know, you saw what happened to Suicide Squad, you know, another superhero game, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, this game is better than Suicide Squad. But I will say maybe they got some consultation from Bungie, and Bungie said no. We said don't even dare release Last of Us Factions, and no, you damn sure shouldn't release this game either.
Yeah, I do agree with you that the canceled Spider-Man multiplayer, the game that doesn't exist, is better than Suicide Squad. I agree with you on that. Suicide Squad is trash, you know. But yeah, again, I do find this very interesting. But yeah, I'm wondering if the tide is turning on these games, you know? And again, it's like, okay, because we know Spider-Man 2 cost $300 million. I'm wondering if that was also part of the cost, this now canceled game, You know, it's interesting, man. And the other question is, yeah, who asked for this? Who asked for a Spider-Man multiplayer game? You know? And again, this would have been another situation of, hey, that company that does the narrative games, make them do multiplayer. Yes, I understand Insomniac has done some multiplayer stuff. At least they have that going for them, you know? But still, it's kind of the same. I don't know, man. It's wild. But me personally, I don't need a Spider-Man multiplayer game. I'm good. You know?
Yeah, I mean, the reason they scrapped is some Sweet Baby Ink.
You know? Go ahead, Benny.
Yeah, to be honest, it's like, do we really need? I mean, it would be a fun thing if your Miles in the game is actually somebody that was actually somebody else, right? Playing through the game. But at the same time, it's like, do we like Spider-Man in general is really all about like the narrative of Spider-Man. You know, you can totally see them turning this into just a cycle of constantly like, oh, hey, beat this guy up. Well, you know, hey, look, it's an alternate version of Dr. Octopus with a different color outfit. Oh, he's even stronger than the other one.
Yeah.
It's sort of just that sort of same cycle that these companies, these multiplayer things seem to do. And I don't know, man, like, I don't really think we need something like that for Spider-Man, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. Brett, what's up?
I'm not the only person that thinks this, that Spider-Man is going to do kind of the same thing that most likely God of War is going to do, where they kind of replace their main protagonist with somebody new, either Atreus or Miles Morales. Like, I think it's pretty clear that Miles Morales is going to be the future headliner of Insomniac Spider-Man games. And I don't think it would have been smart for them to kind of start that with Miles Morales is the game, you know, the DLC standalone game and the character your friend plays. That gives them a very Tails from Sonic and Tails kind of thing. And I'm not sure that's how you want to, like, Tails will never be able to carry a franchise because he's always the second runner, you know, or the second string, the sidekick, the not original. And as much as I don't think that they should replace Peter Parker with Miles Morales, I can tell you that making him the you know, co-op option would definitely seal that in people's minds.
But here's the thing, like, you know, okay, let's say, you know, we had a game with Miles and Peter, right? You know, where the other character, the one that's always, you know, second to you, is playing the other character. So, like, no matter who you're playing. If, you know, in other words, let's say you're playing a Miles Morales playthrough, right? You know, somebody else is actually playing Spider-Man in that situation. Or let's say vice versa. Spider-Man is being played by you. Then you're teamed up with a Miles Morales player. I don't see that as a bad thing. But at the same time, it's like, do we really need to have something like that? And I don't think that we do. I think once you start getting into that realm of cycle of gaming, where in other words we're now you know, especially with a title that is so very story driven, when we started getting into that thing like we just keep serving you up different colored bad guys so that you can grind up some more loot. And, you know, essentially we're trying to do, try to do Spider-Man Destiny or the Avengers game, which is that situation. In other words, hey, look, it's you're grinding costumes that do things to your characters to make them better. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Here's something that's interesting. Okay.
If they really wanted to do this idea, they could literally just make up their own superhero and not have to pay the licensing fee to Disney to do that.
Oh, you mean when Insomniac had, you know, that was not Insomniac, but remember Sucker Punch? They had a superhero franchise.
They had a superhero franchise right there. So theoretically, I would say, like, if you're going to go down this road, instead of doing it with a licensed franchise, which literally costs you money for putting these things out, and they collect X amount of money from you as you're doing this stuff, you know, I think the better situation would be like, no, if we're going to do this sort of superhero idea, let's take something that we have already and then apply it to that. You could kind of do Infamous multiplayer, you know, superhero game if you wanted to.
If you wanted to, yeah.
That also, the market has proven that that doesn't work.
Yeah. Okay. This is what I find interesting. So again, I'm looking at the leaked games here. That wasn't the only multiplayer game they were going to work on. This is very, check this out. I'm going to read all the games too. So this year we're supposed to get a Spider-Man game, right? Spider-Man 2 multiplayer game. Next year, Venom. Year after that, Wolverine. Year after that, Wolverine multiplayer. Then the year after that, Spider-Man 3. Here's where it gets really interesting. An X-Men multiplayer game in 2028. Then a single player game in 2029. And look at that. Whoa. Ooh. 2031 through 2035. New IPs. Finally. You know? But so they wanted to make a Spider-Man 2, Wolverine, and X-Men multiplayer. Very. So my question is, if this Spider-Man multiplayer got canceled, are you going to cancel the other ones too?
I would think so.
Very interesting.
Well, listen, if you look at their, they also posted the other thing that got leaked was their, what the percentage of what Marvel takes from any sort of their yes. things. That's a lot of money that they're pulling.
How much was it? Do you know the percentage?
I don't remember. It's a pretty hefty percentage of that they get off of their sales, which goes into the fact that they say that the situation is like, obviously Spider-Man did really well, you know, but a lot of that money didn't go toward Insomniac or PlayStation themselves. A lot of it went over to Marvel for the license of that Spider-Man franchise. And I can see why they're trying to put if anything, they're going to cut they're going to pull the belt tight on all of this stuff now, because it's like, why are we concentrating on all this established IP when we're spending so much money to have it? I think. And that's what the shift we sort of heard about, right? You know, obviously the mysterious thing, oh, hey, a bunch of multiplayer games got, you know, they had 12 multiplayer games supposedly in development. We don't know how many. Mm. We at least know maybe three of them that have already been canceled. How many of those have been canceled, and how many of them are things that are established IP related? Helldivers didn't get killed. Why? Because they own Helldivers.
Yeah.
And they don't. They're and it was a lower budgeted game, so it's a win for Sony on that one. And I think that's what we're going to see. We're going to see if there are any multiplayer things that are going to be left in the line. It's going to be their own IP, and it's not going to have a nutty budget like something some of their bigger budgeted games.
Yeah. And then my other question is for anybody here on the panel and in the chat: would you have wanted a Spider-Man multiplayer game?
I thought it was fascinating the way they're like, oh yeah, I didn't think about that. How do you do multiplayer with Spider-Man? All right, you put multiple guys in. So would I have wanted it? Not really. But I found the idea. I found their mental leap interesting. Oh hey, how do you get multiplayer out of Spider-Man? Oh, multiverse.
Yeah. You already know my answer, but Rich, go ahead. I know you're very upset right now that this game's not coming.
I'm not upset. I know Carlos is, but to respond to what he just said, we already got a Spider-Man multiplayer game. It's called Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. The movie is the game. So no, we don't need it. We don't need a game. We saw the movie. That was a lot of Spider-Man in that movie. I'm good now. We don't need no multiplayer.
I'll just like to be on the record and say that I'm disappointed that we didn't get Spider-Man Factions. And when Sony said they were working on 10 live service games, they must have been lying, because there's a shit ton of these multiplayer games that are coming out. And I doubt this Spider-Man game would have been just a regular standard multiplayer. So yeah, it's crazy just how like the direction and the focus that Sony's doing with these studios. It's like, who can Naughty Dog give me a multiplayer game for The Last of Us? No, but they'll sure work on it. Can the was Insomniac working on this, or was it someone else?
That's a good question. Was Insomniac gonna license it to somebody else? But it doesn't say anything about that I saw.
Yeah, and you know, working on a Spider-Man multiplayer game. Working on, you know, they already got Helldivers, they got Destiny and Marathon, they got all of these freaking multiplayer games. They got the Jade Raymond game, and they got the game that got canceled recently. I forgot Devotions to. I forgot what the name of the studio is that just
Deviation. Deviation Games.
Deviation yeah. Games was working on one of those as well, and yeah, that's what gaming has come down to for Sony at this point. Not looking good.
Yeah, shit is crazy, man. Let's see. Quit all these. This is from Berserker Guts. What's up, brother? He goes, quit all these dumb multiplayer games and get the Wolverine game out faster instead. I don't know, man. I don't know about that Wolverine game now, to be honest, because a certain consulting group is probably going to be involved too. So, yeah. All right, let's move on, man. This one's kind of interesting. I don't know why this decided to pop up because, I mean, it's a new story. Effect. Actually, no. You know what? I'll skip this one. This is actually from. It is more. Yo, this is how fucked up I am from daylight saving time. I look at March 11th. I'm like, oh yeah, March 11th. That was months ago. No, it's not. 3 days ago, motherfucker. but regardless, this thing is something that was discovered from like 15 years ago. I'm reading this from Fandom Wire. Let me see. Oh, bullet points. Thank you. Based on an interview with the former head of Xbox, the console generation was pretty much going to end after the Xbox 360. The story is basically that Microsoft was already entertaining the idea of like kind of just exiting the console market 15 years ago. I told you guys this would happen every year consistently. Motherfucking daylight savings time, Brian shows up an hour late. What's going on, Brian?
Nothing much, guys.
Yeah, you already know, man. Brian, I love the predictability, man.
Actually, the funny thing is, it's been 10 years, and yet I still do it, and that's what's so fun. It's like, I just don't learn.
Yeah, that's all right. Daylight savings time is trash. But before we move on to this section, Brian, did you see the news about the leaked Spider-Man multiplayer game?
Yes, I did. Okay. And I 100% agree with what you say, Tony. Like, they're now reporting leaks again.
Yeah. You weren't here to hear my mini rant earlier this episode. Because I'm like, okay, because Brian, I don't know if you saw the goalpost being shifted. The first one was actually, okay, so first one was like, okay, so you guys are now reporting on this. Oh, no, this is different. This is from, you know, something that was canceled. But I'm like, you realize this leak. We heard about this specific leak, the multiplayer, back in December. Oh no, but you know, no people's data was put out. It's from the same leak, so it was the same data. Where's the consistency here? You know? It's the same, it's from the same fucking leak that you didn't want to talk about. Now we could talk about it. Okay. And Brian, a shocker to you, you know who actually did report? Okay, because you know websites weren't reporting on this. You know who reported on this? Kotaku of all places. They report on the leak. They reported about this multiplayer game back in December. Isn't that interesting?
Very.
You know, the same Sweet Baby Ink defenders. Those guys, you know? Shit is crazy. Okay, but yeah, Brian, I mean, I already knew where your head was at with this. It's the hypocrisy that bugs me the most, man. You know? Oh, Greg Miller said we can't talk about it, so we can't talk about it. Let's talk about this. But it's from the same leak. But it wasn't from a game that was unannounced. Yes, it was from the same leak. You know, come on, man, bullshit. You know. Anyway, let's move on here. Again, this story here is that apparently Xbox wanted to exit the console wars like 15 years ago during the 360 era, which was the only true successful era for Xbox. Let's just be honest about that. So here's some bullet points. Based on an interview with the former head of Xbox, the console generation was pretty much coming to an end after the Xbox 360. This was due to unexpected sales and a lack of projected vision for the console era going forward. Fortunately, a shift towards newer technology, especially cloud gaming, has changed the industry's perspective. That's, you know, them editorializing, obviously. And the reason I want to talk about this is because it's interesting because since like 2015, when Xbox started bringing their games to PC, we on Throwdown, yes, we've been around that long, have been saying, hey, this kind of makes sense for a software company to not focus so much on hardware, you know? Microsoft, I know Microsoft has, you know, hardware as well, but they're primarily a software company. And now we see how they want to have all their shit everywhere, you know, more software focused. So this makes sense. And by the way, the head of Xbox in question, our boy, Peter Moore, you know, very interesting. But yeah, the things would have been a lot different if they would have exited during that time, you know, because, you know, the 360 was a huge success and it kind of helped usher in, you know, this multiplayer focused world we now have, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, but then, but also that also it also proves that you're trying to not doing your due diligence as a company and quickly tossing out a console also doesn't help things either. They're lucky that when they put that thing out, it literally got the head start, you know.
Yeah, but it's interesting that we're talking about this before. Same
momentum.
Yeah. Okay. I want to read this. The truth is that Peter and the team were deeply speculating whether or not consoles were really the future of the industry. As it turns out, Microsoft was under the impression that the console tech and sales just weren't enough to sustain a foreseeable future, which is kind of what they're saying now. They're basically, you know, Phil Spencer has flat out said, we are not in the console wars anymore. He said that, you know? So it's kind of interesting that Microsoft was already talking about these things that they are now talking about, you know, in the current day, back 15 years ago, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were talking about like, oh, this maybe we should be multi-platform. Very interesting, because that's one of the big narratives that's going around right now, you know? So, yeah, very, very interesting right there to hear that. But again, software company, I'm not too surprised, you know?
Exactly. Why would they, you know, why would they want to continue with something like that when they literally can spread as wide of a net as possible, you know?
Yeah. And that's what they're doing now, apparently. You know, they're putting all their games, not all their games, but they're putting some games as a test.
This is, you know, right now what's going on is the toe dip.
The toe dip. Yeah.
They're toe dipping and seeing what kind of money they can get out of doing multi-platform sales. So what was the first one to come out, right? It was that, what the hell was the name of that game?
Which one?
The medieval game that can't, the medieval type game that's coming, that came out. They already had one that already released.
Pentiment, yeah.
Pentiment was the first of those releases. Next up, coming up next week, is Hi-Fi Rush, and the last one is Sea of Thieves.
Yeah.
So it's all Grounded. It's all the
when's
test
that coming? Things. When's that coming?
Grounded? I don't know
when that was. That Grimmer was four that games. That was the other
it
one.
It was four games. Let's see.
Yeah.
Grounded.
And if y'all looking to play Dragon's Dogma 2, Brian is. And even I might play that shit, you know?
The release date for Grounded on PS5.
Yeah, CK, a couple of weeks. Actually, April, I think it was last week. When is it, Manny? April what?
It says released. Excuse me. I don't know why it says. Grounded will digitally release on April 16th for PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5 and Nintendo Switch.
Interesting.
So April 16th. Yeah. So we're.
Yeah.
We in the thing.
Yeah. CK. Last week. Because I went to an event to play Dragon's Dogma for 3 hours. So you could go to Tom's Guide, read that, or check out last week's episode or the week before that, the main show, to hear my impressions on it. But yeah, again, I find this very interesting how Microsoft was talking about the same thing 15 years ago, you know?
None of this, a lot of times, you know, here's the thing, like as one of those guys, you see where your money is going. Mm-hmm. You see what's going to be happening. You know, again, we keep throwing up, former head of Sony, Sony PlayStation saying the AAA aspect cannot be sustained. We need to lower our budgets and essentially maximize, you know, essentially put out more titles. And then also, you know, those smaller titles will also lead to innovation. Because he even said there's another interview even very recently that came out, which he said the same thing. Innovation doesn't happen with those high budget games. It's just usually just like, you know, it's like graphical. It's not really like, okay, we're doing this, we're going crazy here. That's how you do it. You do it when you don't have a big you know, overhead as far as budget, and you have one thing that you do right. And a lot of you see it. Even within the right now with the for years on the indie space, a bunch of people doing these sorts of things. What was the, you know, it, for a game like what was that, Journey? What was that? Passive online mode.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole bunch of different games that had all these little things that they did that eventually made their way into a bigger game.
Yeah, that's true. All right, moving on here. This one's very interesting. So Saber Interactive has split from the Embracer Group, taking 38 video game projects with it. They freed themselves, man. They freed themselves. Because yep. Embracer, man, that's a very scummy company, man. You know? Killing studios left and right. These guys are like, fuck that shit. We're out.
No, they don't want to. They don't want to do that stuff, man. Fuck that.
But they were fortunate that they had the equity to do it. It cost $500 million to divest.
Shit.
You know, that's not chump change. $500 million to break away. How many studios can cough up that kind of money?
Bungie.
Bungie and Saber. Saber's been around forever, so is Bungie. But like, okay, they could do it, but most others can't. They just look at Volition; they're gone.
Yeah,
obliterated.
Oh, the guys that did Hitman too. They also pulled away from Square Enix.
Yeah. Oh yeah, IO Interactive, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. But yeah, no, Chris, that's a good point. It's like not a lot of studios. You know, they're still hostages there. Yeah. You know, that's the only way I could describe them. They're hostages. You know,
what the hell was Embracer thinking, man? They clearly got in over themselves. Well,
clearly, they were trying to embrace the idea of taking as many game companies as possible and try to make a lot of money. That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
Man, it's like taking all of these responsibilities and thinking, oh, you know, it's like having five wives. It's like, yeah, that sounds cool, but man.
Oh, man. I was about to say something, but I'm going to get in trouble with a certain religious group, you know? But yeah, so yeah, the deal is initially valued at $247 million. Fuck. That's a lot of money, man. I'm reading this from my gen. There are a number of interesting points in the deal. For example, Beacon Interactive has the option right to acquire Metro developer 4A Games and pinball developer Zen Studios for fixed price within a certain time period. According to Bloomberg reporter Jason Schreier, Beacon Interactive has indeed decided to buy both studios. Long-term license and publishing rights to all current and future PC and console games in the Metro franchise are held within the Embracer operative group. I can't pronounce that. So does Embracer still own that franchise then? I didn't really get that.
That didn't
make any sense. That wasn't very clear, yeah. But yeah, man, pretty crazy stuff. I wonder what other studios can. I think that's the better question asked. What studios can break away from Embracer, you know? Because that's a lot of money.
Oh, by the way, Jay Shep put something in the chat. He said they got screwed over by the Saudi group. And then I noticed that in 2022... One of their biggest owners of Embracer is Savvy Games Group, which is a wholly owned Saudi Arabian trust investment fund, and they invested over $1 billion, I think like 2 years ago. So I think that's why they got a whole influx of acquisitions that Embracer got. It's like, let's take all of them.
Yeah,
let's take the lot, and then you know the ramifications are slowly but surely sort of manifesting themselves right now.
Yeah, and then Jay Gunn saw a shift in the industry, and he's like, "I know more money.
Oh, man. But yeah, good on them. Good on Saber Interactive to do that, you know. They should try to buy some of the other studios from Embracer. Free them. Free their brothers, you know. Shit is crazy. All right, Berserker Guts. We didn't actually talk about that. So we will now. We got to talk about Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection. It's a fucking disaster, apparently. Ain't that something, you know? And it's the same studio that fucked up another port, too. Let me see.
Did they do the GTA port?
No, it's not Grove Street Games. It's another one here. Let me read this.
Oh, is it Night Dive Studio?
Not sure. I'll figure this out when I'm reading this. The Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection is facing review bombing on Steam due to multiplayer issues. So that's fucked up. Players are experiencing problems with server availability, rubber banding, spawning, and clunky controls. Despite the rocky start, developer Asper, that's who made it, Manny. Developer Asper has the potential to fix the issues and reach the collection's full potential. This sounds like another Master Chief Collection situation, man. you know. But yeah, I know people are, and here's the thing, when this game was announced, motherfuckers were hype, you know, because they wanted the classic Battlefront games, not the bullshit ones that we got now. And they were pretty stoked about this, and they got fucked over, basically, you know. There's only four servers, really? How does that work?
They obviously underestimated their stuff, kind of like the way Helldivers did, too. So
yeah.
But at least Helldivers was able to, you know, what do they call it, to address a lot of that.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe these guys will, but I'm wondering if, like, people will stop caring by then, you know, because people are pissed off. Those same clowns are working on the KOTOR remake. Ooh, boy. Didn't that shit get canceled?
Thought it did.
Yeah, I thought it got canceled. But there wasn't there like two KOTOR remakes? I'm not sure. But I remember that being canceled, one of them. Four servers is nothing. That's four developer PCs sitting in a random room. They said it's still in development. Okay, well, you know, I guess good luck with that, man. Brian, weren't you a fan of these original Battlefront games?
A massive fan, which is why it's very odd that they mess it up. Because, again, these are PS2 games. Yeah, PS2 games. Yeah. So I don't know how you can mess them up that badly. Because I've been seeing footage where, like, the... Oh, gosh, the things... Like, the whole graphics are all just not clipping. All just glitched out, and all the textures are, like, green and blue and all sorts. Like, some sort of shader problems, I guess. It just looks really fucked up, and I heard that the file sizes are massive, apparently, so it's like, why? Makes no sense. But the other thing that really gets me is these are the same guys that did the Tomb Raider remasters, and they came out
without a hitch. That was pretty good.
That was pretty good, yeah.
And that was like last month and the month prior, yeah. So I'm surprised why this is so bad.
Yeah, that is weird. I wonder why they fucked that one up. You know, these are PS2 games, like you said, you know, Tomb Raider were PS1 games. So they got those right, but not PS2 games. I don't know, man, but
whatever happened to scale it up.
Yeah, scale it up. That's all you got. Just flip a button. You know, that's what they said, man. But apparently it's not the case. So, yeah, if you're a Star Wars Battlefront fan, that sucks. Don't they have the manpower? Who knows, man? It could be just plain incompetence. You know, that people got to talk about that, too. Some studios are just not talented, you know.
Or it could be crunching.
Why do publishers outsource porting? Because it's simpler, I guess. Manny, why is that? Why do they outsource?
Well, it's because you outsource because you can get things for cheaper.
Yeah.
You just like anything, you have a bunch of different studios out there, and you put it out there like, okay, we're looking to have somebody port this game. And then they'll just look to see has the price with it, which was within their budget. That's same with anything. Why does anybody outsource?
Yeah.
You know, it's just a matter of seeing the talent, you know, not only, you know, getting, not only is that, but also seeing the talent that is there. Sometimes what will happen a lot of times is these companies will underestimate the ability of a studio. One thing, you know, a lot of times what happens is you'll see a studio, let's say, that has a lot of really impressive work they have done in the past, right? But they were just, you know, there's no guarantee that the people that made that really impressive thing still work at that studio because they could have all been freelance. Or they were one name in a bunch of names that worked on a specific title. So they may have done trees for some other game, but their name is still on that thing as somebody who's actually worked on it. So obviously a company doesn't, you know, obviously you have a good eye, you can tell the difference, but sometimes you can't. You're like, okay, wow, they've done this amazing work. Well, they can do that for us for this one, right? And that's how those sorts of situations happen.
Yeah.
But again, most of it is really budget-based.
Yeah, budget. And also, you know, there is sometimes the, you know, manpower thing too. It's like, hey, we have X amount of people working on this more priority. You're not going to give the same priority to a remake that you will to a new game, for example. So you got to kind of allocate that. That's how freelancing works too. You know, like, again, I'm just using me as an example, but every site does this. When you have your main core staff writers working on, you know, higher priority things, But something big comes around or something important, like a news thing, you freelance it to somebody else, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like that. Here's the thing. Outsourcing is not inherently a bad thing. It's necessary in a lot of cases. It's just sometimes you will get burned, you know?
Yeah.
Not every studio is going to be able to take on every single project. They have to, you know, delegate that to, you know, other studios when they can. And again, it is cheaper too, you know?
Yeah. So
that's just the reality of things, man. Yeah.
Yeah. There's always a lot of different factors that cause these things to happen. And, you know, hopefully the main crew could get in on there and start, you know, and get it to look up to snuff, you know?
Yeah. So there's that. But yeah, it kind of sucks if you're, you know, a fan of those games. All right. So moving on here. Our boy, Stig Asmussen, is going to make a new AAA narrative-driven single-player action-adventure game in his new studio that he's going to found, you know? Stig Asmussen, the director of God of War 3, which is one of the best fucking games ever, you know? And he also did the Jedi Survivor games, you know?
I mean, he's been an industry guy for years.
Yeah.
Like he worked on all of the original trilogy of God of War.
Yeah, in some capacity.
You know, he was on the first one. He worked on little environments and environments on the two previous ones. And God of War 3 was his turn in the seat after Corey Barlog had left.
Yeah.
So I mean, to be honest, like with the way things have sort of gone with the previous, you know, with their working at EA. You know, because he left EA.
I feel like
this is a really, this is a really good thing for him. You know, I'd like to definitely. He's obviously proven that when the stakes were down, he was able to create a very cool game with that Star Wars game. So, all power to him. And also have to say it's very cool. But it's ironically a pretty good time to open a new studio.
It is,
especially.
Yeah.
Especially with so many companies bleeding talent right now. You know, also, side note, you know our good buddy Jeff, right?
Keely?
He actually said something about this.
Let's put a pin on that. Let's talk about that next. I'm glad. You guys in the Discord didn't talk about that. That's why they didn't see it. But yeah, I mean, I do want to discuss that, actually. Very interesting. So the name of the studio is going to be called Giant Skull. And like I said, it's going to be focused on, you know, creating AAA narrative-driven single-player games, which is what Stig, you know, specializes in.
Does.
You know, so that's good. And this is something we'll talk about more on the Sunday show because we got a question about this. But again, a game being AAA doesn't mean it needs to be open world. You could still make a AAA game that's 10 hours long, you know, and just be
fucking
quality, you know?
I think the thing to understand is that a lot of, you know, things that we consider AAA games.
Yeah.
These are games that were made by smaller studios.
Yeah.
Like a lot, you know, like, you know, who made some of those, what was it? There was, some of the Star Wars games. Those were all like smaller studios working underneath the banner of, was it at the time, THQ. So AAA can be a world that what is considered AAA can come from a smaller studio, especially with so many of the engines being, you know, the way they are, where it's like it's not relatively simple, but you can build off a lot of, you know, you can make, if you have an Unreal Engine license, you can make something, you know, even just pretty decent looking just by using their usual stuff.
There was a game like that not so long ago called Hellblade. That was just that. Mm-hmm. The game was not AAA, but it looked AAA as fuck, you know?
Yeah, and I think that was that in essence was their proof of concept of saying, okay, yes, we can do a high quality looking sort of a game and still keep the budget down.
Yep.
And also do the things that they're sort of known for. Like they're known for doing narrative driven games, actor driven games where they have a lot of motion capture and it's very script heavy. All those things that you saw in their previous titles, they're like, okay, we can do this on a smaller budget. And I think that's that'll be cool. I'm excited to see what Stig comes down, what he does.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, generally speaking, we like Stig. He seems like a really cool guy. His games are cool, too. So, looking forward to this. Giant Skull. I like that name too. That was pretty fun, you know.
If you notice my icon, I'm a pretty Scully type of guy. So I dig it.
I know you appreciate that, you know.
I'd dig me some skulls.
So this is what Stig says about, you know, the company. We want our players to have a certain degree of autonomy and ownership in the game and agency as they're playing it. We want to make a game that has a momentum to it that you want to keep on playing. And we respect our players. We want to create real, authentic worlds that don't feel random. They feel like there's a rich history and that there's a through line. Good. I love every sentence was better than the last. That's great. Good to hear. Who knows, you know, if that'll happen, but, you know, that's good to hear. That's like, hey, we want to make games for the players, you know. Remember when I used to be standard? Remember when they actually used to make video games for video game players? You know, instead of like these fucking weirdos that don't even play video games and other interest groups, but we're not going to get into that. But if you've been paying attention, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But yeah, shout out to Stig, man. It's going to be 30 people studio based out of Los Angeles.
That's a big studio for an independent, but it's a small studio for a AAA.
Yeah, so it's AA, do we dare say?
I would say they're a AA type of studio.
Yeah.
Given their lineage, you know, I don't know what the God of War team was back on God of War 1, but I don't think they had like 100 people working on God of War 1.
Who knows, man? It says that this team is comprised of veterans of Star Wars Jedi and Fortnite. Interesting.
If their Jedi Fallen was a Unreal game, right?
I'm not sure. I got to look into that.
If it's EA, probably not.
If it's EA, was probably the Frostbite engine they use? Because you know how EA loves using that engine for everything.
They only recently started using Unreal stuff.
For which game?
Survivor is Unreal.
Oh, it is Unreal. Okay.
Fallen Order.
So there you go.
Yeah.
That's one of them. So there you go.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure these guys are going to use that engine as well, especially if they're Star Wars, Jedi Survivor, and Fortnite guys, you know?
Yeah.
Crazy. All right. Yeah. Shout out to Stig, man. Shout out to Stig. Okay, Manny, let's talk. Since you brought it up, you could talk about it. Mr. Kiwi. He actually acknowledged layoffs.
Yes, he did. In this situation, he did manage to say something about Stig in this situation. So, and he also did talk about layoffs, which was, well, one of them was the Rooster Teeth layoffs, which is interesting. Well, I think we already said that he doesn't have any stake in Rooster Teeth, so that's why he's able to say something about that. But yeah. There you go.
Yeah. I read this one article about it, and the article was basically saying like, oh man, Jeff Keighley came out to say this, and they were like, for a moment, I thought he was finally turning things around. He's going to be a good guy. But then the article went out to say like, oh, but he only did this to promote Summer Game Fest, you know, because basically the gist was, since Summer Game Fest was about to be announced, he didn't want articles to start shitting on him for not talking about the layoffs. So he'll talk about layoffs. So people are like, hey, Jeff Keighley's finally talking about layoffs. And then Summer Game Fest comes around, you know, the announcement, and everybody's happy with Jeff Keighley, you know. So I'm like, I mean, obviously that was just the writer's interpretation, but I'm like, I could believe that. Jeff Keighley seems like that type of guy, you know?
In general, he's playing the game.
Yeah.
He doesn't want his reputation to get in the way of the thing that he wants to promote. So he'll mention something about something that he does not have a full stake in. Like, in other words, again, like the Rooster Teeth thing, a few other things, where, in other words, Rooster Teeth never sponsored Game Awards. And Rooster Teeth was also falling apart. Ask him to talk about the layoffs of something specific at like Warner Brothers. Yeah. Right. Ask him to talk about a couple of other things that are literally directly affect his sponsorships. So that's why he'll never, ever say anything about any of these things. He doesn't. What is the old saying? Don't shit what you, where you eat. That's the same thing that goes here.
Yeah.
You're not going to see any sort of that talk unless it's something that in that he, number one, has a you know, a stake in, you know, which affects his thing, and two, affects people that are his friends.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's, yeah, go ahead, Carlos.
Yeah, it's a classic, you know, I don't want to piss people off because they'll pull, you know, pull out of my award show or my summer show thing. It's that's the game. You know, that's why
the
no, go ahead, Carlos. Finish your thought, Carlos.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
That's why, like, all these, you know, all these people who pretend like they're good guys and stuff like that online, it's just a front, man. A lot of these companies, you know, the forefront, you know, Phil Spencer and all these CEOs, that's part of the game. They try to put that face where it's like, oh, I'm actually a great person, but you know, there's always a motivation behind some of the stuff. And that tweet, you know, there's motivation because, like you guys mentioned, he's trying to simmer down some of the heat that he's been getting. Mm-hmm. So he's like, oh, well, you can't make fun of me. You can't make fun of me after the Summer Games Fest stuff because, look, I tweeted out this thing about people getting their jobs back. Yeah, so it's all just a ruse, man.
Mm-hmm. It's all calculated.
The champ thing, I would have said he would have been good if he said what he went when he said one of those things about the layoff is that we've teamed up with a bunch of our partners to find these people work. And it's part of the Game Awards, the Summer Games Fest job cycle or whatever, right? In other words, get people over. If you're out of work, you come over to Summer Games Fest and we'll have a bunch of different recruiters for a bunch of companies there. That would be the champ way to do something. In other words, be like, okay, we get it. We're sponsored by a bunch of these assholes who fucking fired you, right? But we have a bunch of things in place for you to try to find some additional work if you decide to come up, if you come down, or you sign up for this thing.
Yeah, and again, this is something we discussed before because Jeff Keighley is seen as a spokesperson for the game industry. He's not. He's just not a face. He's a Carson Daly. He's a Ryan Seacrest. He's just a presenter, presenter, you know?
Exactly. You'll go with Jeff Keighley because he won't ruffle the feathers of the studios. He won't do anything like controversial. He's there to present these things to you. One thing I think he needs to get over is that he can't be a viable voice in the industry if he doesn't have a fucking opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that him having an opinion also endangers his safety with all of the different his sponsors.
No, but he could defend Kojima all day, every day. You know,
he can give Kojima 8 minutes on a stage talking about nothing and showing nothing,
and then rushing everybody off,
and then rush off the guy. Who literally a team that literally people said, no, you can't do this. Rushing off that guy. And he was in his speech, he was going to have something about the layoffs that in the industry.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can totally give all those people, rush a Japanese person who has to essentially double translate he has to have a translator or a localizer literally standing, or, you know, excuse me, interpreter literally standing next to him. When he says what he needs to say and have the guy repeat it, and you're going to rush that guy off the stage? Even the guy who had Godzilla minus one, like, he got more time than those guys. And he couldn't even speak that English very well.
Yeah. My God. And then obviously rushing off the people who won Game of the Year, rushing them off too.
Yeah, rushing them off too.
But yeah.
Anyway,
yeah, because Jeff Keighley's not the spokesperson for the game. You know, he's not at all. Never has been.
He's a spokesperson for the gaming industry, capitalism.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is the Dorito Pope. He earned that name for a reason. You know, that
he's a Dorito Pope. Right. He's the slayer of E3.
Yeah. Right. But Summer Game Fest. Yeah.
And that's the one thing that you see that he literally aggressively went after.
Yeah.
Again, that's why I said, what the fuck did they do to him that he needed to go and literally at every single point step in and start pushing back? Something he did. And it's the first time I've ever seen this guy show any balls in public.
Yeah, right.
Besides the whole Kojima thing, but that, you know.
But that's a safe thing, though, defending Kojima.
It's safe because it involves Kojima, and everybody's opinions about Kojima in that situation are all aligned.
Yeah, so it's safe, you know. All right, man, moving on here. We were talking about that. Oh, yeah, some good news. One of Throwdown's favorite games.
Good news, everyone.
Yeah. One of Throwdown's favorite games, a game we actually streamed heavily back in the day, sold 25 million copies. We are, of course, talking about Monster Hunter World. That's crazy, man. The game is still selling, apparently.
How many?
You know, 25 million. It is the biggest selling game in Capcom's, entire library, dude. That's crazy.
I wonder if they'll get a clue.
Yeah, right? Like, yo, can sequel, though? You know? That's nuts. I remember, when the game dropped, it was already, one of the biggest sellers ever for Capcom, you know? And this was 2018. Yeah. That was a good year, man. That was a good year for gaming, you know? Probably, arguably, the last good year of gaming that we've had, you know? Because it all kind of went downhill after that, you know? So the game had already sold 19.6 million copies at the end of last year, but with Monster Hunter, Iceborne Master Edition. So that's what bumped it up. Interesting. But yeah, now it's 25 million. Brian, what's up, man?
Oh, no, I was about to say that the Master Edition was out for some time. I think the weird push was, I don't know why, but there was this hashtag on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, return to World, and for some odd reason, everyone just flocked back to World afterwards, and it just did really well. I'm surprised at the numbers, and this is what Tony was saying. Well, this is what most people have been saying for a long time. You need to put Monster Hunter on a real console, like a real place, you know, because previously it's all been 3DS or PlayStation Port.
PSP. Yeah, it was on PSP.
Yeah, PSP. which one is it?
Not that other one.
It's all been on handheld stuff and on the Wii. So it's like, okay, and even on the Switch. So it's like, okay, put it on a real machine and see what happens. And then they did, and it's all sold great. So again, hopefully they learn from this and they say, hey, you know what? Let's just do this from now on. You know, put it on the big boy machines. You know,
yeah,
on the grown consoles, if you wish,
and PC too, because it sold a lot on PC as well. You know, and Brian, you'll like this too. Iceborne, 11.6 million copies since going on sale in 2019. That's impressive, man.
That's good. That's really good.
Yeah, Iceborne was the shit. Yeah, good stuff, man. And apparently, the Monster Hunter franchise as a whole has sold 97 million copies. Damn, you know. Yeah, Jay Shep goes, cue Richard Bailey Jr., grown man gaming. You know? Good stuff, man. So, yeah, shout out to Monster Hunter and Capcom. Come on, where's that sequel? Monster Hunter Paradise, man. The big boy gaming. You know?
One of the biggest travesties of that game, Throwdown-wise, was that Brian fell in love with that game a year or two after
we were done with it. You know, it's crazy. And then he surpassed us.
Yeah, he pretty much ran circles around that game.
You know, because we did play with Ryan one time. He's like, yo, what the fuck are you guys doing?
You got the platinum in that. Yep. You got the platinum in that, right, Brian?
Yep, that's how hard I fell in love with it. And the cool thing is that even the DLC has platinum, but I'm not that crazy because...
Yeah,
the OG one was stupid enough, but yeah, it's just so good. Like,
it's a weird
game loop, but it's a simple loop, but it's a good loop, and it works really well. And this one, what I was on about when I was talking about Helldivers, Monster Hunter is a game that's fun, no matter how many people are playing it. Like, you can play it solo, have fun. You can play it with 2, 3, 4 people, still have fun. Friends, randoms, it's still fun.
The Japanese,
extremely fun because you just sit there and just watch it happen. You know, it's like, cool, have fun, guys. You know? Yeah, it's just, it just works really well, and it's a really good formula, so hopefully they can keep it up.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing about I liked about Monster Hunter. It's like, you know, it does have a like a difficulty selector. If you want easy mode, play with some Japanese guys. You know, you got props for the fucking monster. You play with them Japanese cats, man. You know?
They'll give you the Sealy tour.
Yeah. So you just gotta hang back, like, okay, I'm useless here. You guys handle this. You're just like, I'm ready to fight. Oh shit, they already killed it. Fuck. All right.
The first time you start playing with Japanese dudes on Monster Hunter and you're fighting like those two bezel guys and stuff.
Yeah, that's the one, man. I was like, I'm useless here. You guys handle this.
And they're like, you're like, man, I have a hammer, and these guys are just in the sky the whole time, and these guys are just flying around with their insect glaives, and at the same time they're healing you.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you know, and then they give you props in the end. It's crazy, you know. I still remember my cousin one time. I think he must have got paired up with like some Japanese kids or something, man, because he went in there. And, you know, they didn't do anything. He got wrecked. He, you know, with his deep voice, like, yo, man, what the fuck? You're supposed to be natural born kaiju killers. What the fuck is this shit? Oh, man, we had some good times, man. That was good. So we have Paradise Drops, man. You know, we're bringing those streams back, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had some heads come through on those streams, too. You know, Riku-san would show up. You know, it's good times, man. Good times. Monster Hunter, man. You know, all right. And the last thing I want to talk about, and Rich, I want to bring you in on this. We got to talk about Rise of the Ronin. The previews were out this week, and you and I can acknowledge we've been playing this game. You mostly, you know, because as I've said many times on Throwdown, any game that has a parrying system, I am trash at this game. You know, I was getting worked, son. You know, the game's cool. I have my main issue is like the graphics. I'm like, why does this shit look like a PS3 game? But I like what they're doing. I give them respect. You know, I only played like an hour. Here's the thing with the preview, we're only allowed to talk about the first 2 hours anyway. So I played like half the shit. But yeah, I was getting fucking wrecked, man. I can never get the fucking timing down, you know. But I suck at parrying in games. That's why when I saw Chris streaming that shit, I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I'm not playing that. You know, I'll be getting fucked up, you know, despite my love for From Software games. But yeah, Rich, if you want to tell us about Rise of the Ronin, the floor is yours, sir.
Yeah, so I have been spending quite a bit of time with Rise of Ronin, as well as Tony mentioned. You know, obviously, if you know enough about me, you know that I really liked Ghost of Tsushima. That was the selling point for me when I saw that this game takes place within a similar time period. But I just want to say right now, this is not Ghost of Tsushima, okay? So when you go into this game, do not think this is exactly the same. There are some similarities to it. But obviously, like you said, for the preview, we were only allowed to play the first 2 hours of the game. I'm actually further along now. So I just started working on my review, and the review does go up next week, I believe, the 21st. But what I will say is this. What you said about the graphics, Tony, I agree 1,000%. This game has been in development since 2015. And I know that I've seen, you know, there's some previews that have been out there and people are talking about. I saw a couple people saying, well, you know, Team Ninja is never really known for their graphics. I understand that. But what I will say is this is an open world game. This is a game that does not feel like it should be only on PlayStation 5. This could be on PS4.
Oh yeah.
And like you said, it could be on PS3 as well, because it doesn't feel like it's doing anything that requires you needing a PS5. But with that said, I am enjoying the story so far. I can't really get into any spoiler territory.
Jay Shep. No, it's not first party. It's Team Ninja, Bandai Namco, all that stuff.
Yeah. It's not first party. But yeah, like I said, I can't really get into the story. I will say the story is interesting. It's taken quite an interesting couple of turns in terms of what's happening. But the combat is really good. You can, of course, switch to different styles, just like you could in Ghost of Tsushima. Another thing I do want to mention, though. Now, obviously, you are able to create how you want your Ronin to look, your samurai to look at the very beginning of the game. And there is an option when you create your character to determine the tone of their voice. Well, let me tell you right now, in this game, as you're playing through the game, you have these conversations with various characters. It's all text-based conversations. So they hardly make use of the fact that you actually have a voice. And again, I understand it's a very ambitious game. They can't put all this stuff in the game. But I feel like it was completely unnecessary to have that as an option from the beginning when it's just going to be all text-based conversations. You do get to make choices on certain things you say. And of course, there are a lot of different factions because the time it takes place, there's a lot of things happening with different factions who have different ideologies, so on and so forth. So you can try to make your choice and shape who you want to work with, and then that allows you to do other things. But overall, I would say so far, I think it's a pretty good game. It does have its faults to a degree, but overall, I'm still having a pretty good time playing it. And to go to what Tony said, yes, it is difficult. Okay, in the beginning, you know, obviously when I started playing, you know, I was able to, I didn't really have any issue with some of the regular enemies. But when you get to those boss battles, mm-hmm. I mean, I got my ass whooped several times. But hey, once you finally figure it out, it's a great feeling, similar to how you guys feel when you were doing Elden Ring. And maybe, you know, if you played any game where it took a while to learn how to, you know, learn how a boss is moving, how to attack them, it's a great feeling once you actually accomplish it. So in those regards, if you like that type of stuff, you will be satisfied. But I would say, yes, it's a pretty good game. And I would say I'll have a lot more thoughts next week on it. So stay tuned to the Coalition.
Yeah. Jay Shep is asking you, what would you score it? I think wait until the review for that, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, I appreciate the question. We are not allowed to talk about any scores quite yet. Yeah. But yes, next week on the Throwdown, I will let you know what my score would be.
Let's
How about
fucking
that?
Go. Yes. Good stuff, man. Good stuff, man. So, yeah, thanks for that, Rich, giving us that in-depth analysis there that I unfortunately was not able to provide because I suck at this game, you know. but I will agree with you because, again, I pushed through it, the 2 hours or whatever we were supposed to play. And, yes, once you slowly start figuring out the bosses and you beat them, it feels good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's good stuff, man. Yeah Richard is not gonna NDA himself, Jay Shep, so thanks for understanding. You don't get everybody in trouble, you know. All right, man. Since we still got some time here, let's discuss the games we've been playing lately. Rich, have you played anything besides Rise of Ronin, or has that been your focus?
That is a good question. So, yes, I have played Rise of Ronin. I've been playing a little bit of WWE 2K24. You know, if you are a wrestling fan, check out Adam's review on the website. Aside from that, I have also been playing this Contra game that I believe we spoke about briefly. Yes.
Yeah, tell us about that, please.
Okay, so I have to admit, I think the game is just okay. All right, now I know that this is kind of like, I don't know if they want to call it like it's not really a remaster, I guess you could say, a re-envisioning, whatever the word there is they're going to use to describe it.
So, Rich, is it fair to say that we shouldn't call it a comeback?
Well, here's the thing. I think this is a game that, I mean, I don't know what's up with this game on PlayStation, because I haven't played on PC. Now, I heard the people who have been playing on PC, it's been awesome. It kind of feels like there's a bit of a delay when you do certain stuff on the console version. Now, I don't know if they released a day one patch, because I haven't checked to see. I mean, I didn't get any alerts about any updates, so I don't know. But, I mean, the game is a lot of fun. But, yes, this is another game where it is very easy to, and again, I haven't played the original Contra games in a while. I don't know how easy it was, or how difficult it was, but this game, if you're playing by yourself, it can get pretty difficult, you know, because, you know, if you get, you take too many hits, your character dies. You have only a certain number of lives before the game is over. So, I mean, it's, and again, you can restart, of course, but I will say the art style, I mean, graphically, the game looks pretty good, I would say. It is fun, but it definitely is challenging. But I would say right now, if you are a Contra fan, maybe you can check it out. It doesn't really cost that much. It's worth checking out, I would say, at the very least, just to know whether or not you're interested. But yeah, it's I'll say it's okay for now.
Cool. All right. Anything else?
Not anything else that I can talk about.
Here's go.
but I will say this. I'll have a little bit more to say next week.
All right, fair enough. Here, right here on Throwdown, and over on the Coalition. Yeah. All right, Chris, what have you been playing lately?
When I get a little time, I'm trying to platinum Pacific Drive.
Oh shit!
So I beat the story mode, and I didn't realize there was a trophy that has to do with getting everything in the garage, like every upgrade and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And one of them requires you to actually die, because when you die, your car is called like a remnant or something like that. It's possessed, right? And you have to die and then get regenerated back at the garage. And then you go back out and you find the ghost of your car to get your stuff back. It's kind of like Dark Souls. It's like, yeah. Oh, I got to get all your shit is in there. Everything that you had on the road. So I have to do that. And I realized I beat the story and I was like, oh yeah, I actually barely made it through everything, but I didn't actually die. So I have to die to get that last trophy. And also the farming gets really hard at the end. Like there's these rare elements that you constantly have to go out to these areas and then keep farming them and try to reroll them and farm them again. So that, it's like a pain in the ass, and I don't have a lot of time to play, so I end up like giving up and then restarting the trip, and I don't know. But I do enjoy some of it. I wish there was a little more like enemies and stuff, but overall, I think it's a good game. I'm enjoying it.
Good stuff. Brian, what have you been playing lately?
I've been playing mostly Tales of Arise recently.
Ooh, great game.
It's extremely fun and addicting. That's like my not Twitch game. It's my Steam Deck game at the moment. So anytime I take a break, just take out some Tales of Arise. So yeah, that's mostly it. I think I'm level 27 ish. So just got all 6 party members. Not a spoiler. And so I guess that this is where the game begins to open up. So I'm excited to see where it goes. I'm loving the combat. It's so much fun. It's so good. Yeah, and just waiting. I'm just filling space until Dragon's Dogma 2, to be honest. Because I did have the idea that I'll start something new, but then I was like, nah, just finish stuff that you have, and then Dragon's Dogma 2 comes out. So that's about me.
Yeah, makes me very happy that you're playing Tales of Arise. That game is fucking, I was obsessed with that, man, when it first came out. Played that, and I didn't have to review it, so I just played it as I wanted. You know, that was a great game. Like, and I, you know, and here's the thing, I like Tales of games, but there was something about that one, man, that, you know, it hits right. So that's dope you're playing it. Brett, what have you been playing lately, sir? He's around. He may not be around. I'll come back to Brett. Carlos, what have you been playing lately?
Just a little bit of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, but not enough to talk about it, because I've really only played like an hour or two of the game.
Oh, shit. Damn, you've been busy lately then.
Yeah, these last couple of weeks have been pretty busy, so I haven't had much chance. But yeah, I mean, that's the game that I'm going to be playing for a while until I beat it. So stay tuned.
There you go. Manny, have you been playing anything?
I've been playing Evil West slowly but surely. So it's been a fun little romp. Not super long, but very, you know, cool stuff. And and right now I'm in the waiting process as to when Hi-Fi Rush comes out on PlayStation. I already pre-ordered it, so it's going to be coming out next week, so it'll be fun.
Good stuff. And as for myself, yes, you know, I played Rise of Ronin, got bodied, so didn't go back to, I'll probably play the game again later, because it does seem kind of cool. you know. Although I kind of still like Ghost of Tsushima's combat a little better because it's more accessible to me. I'm like that's the only time, one of a few times where I like the parrying because it seems like it's long enough. And this one is like, you got to be fucking quick, man. Maybe I should just plug the controller in, you know, lessen the latency. I don't know, man, because it's like, I pressed it. Why the fuck is it? It's working, you know? Or maybe it's just my slow-ass reactions, but good stuff. What's up?
Some games do offer, like, the ability to adjust the timing. At least for a game for Hi-Fi Rush, there is actually a thing to adjust the timing of stuff that's happening.
So. But I don't want to do.
Sometimes you got to do it, man.
Yeah. Nah. No, I won't do it. I still have my pride. You know.
I mean, it's their fault. It's their fault. The latency is off. So.
Like, oh no, it could be me. I'm a fucking old man, you know? I always knew there would be a time where here's the funny thing. Like, even when I was like deep, like when gaming was my main hobby, I always knew there's probably gonna be a point where you can't play games anymore unless JRPGs, because your reaction's gonna be all off, you know? So it could be
here's the thing, like there's alternate, some games offer different things. One of them is they obviously slowing down the game, but there's also ones where you can essentially increase the time to match up when you press a button. So like what they'll do is they'll give you a little bar and they'll have like a beat on it, and then you press it along with the beat, right? And you're like, oh fuck, it's not working right. And you can adjust to where it matches up with what you're pressing. So it's not like slowing down the game. It's more like it's essentially adjusting the way the latency works.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. So,
I mean, I don't know if Rise of the Ronin has something like but it definitely should because it is a very sort of timing based sort of game.
Hey Brian, I think you should answer this question. Yo, is Shadow of War still worth playing? It's $5 in the PSN store.
Yes.
All right, there's your answer, and I'm glad I tossed it to you because my answer would have been no. But that's based off the original version of the game. You played the actual version as it exists now. The original version was fucking terrible. Terrible game. So I've been playing Rise of Ronin. The game I've been playing may surprise some of you, but also not surprise any of you, you know? Because I'm keeping it real, man. I'm still very, very upset. Fucking Akira Toriyama died, right? So I'm like, I'm gonna replay Dragon Ball Kakarot. I don't like the game. I don't think it's a good game, but it does a good job of putting you in that Dragon Ball world that he created. All that weird quirkiness and stuff, you know? So it's been fun seeing, you know, the story that we know play out, but with, like, you know, Bandai Namco kind of filling in little things here and there. Like, you know how, like, for example, Gohan was, like, out in the forest, like, for 6 months by himself. It's like, you get to play what he did during that time, for example. You know, hunting dinosaurs and shit like that. So it's been fun. And then just doing side missions for, you know, characters, you know, like Baba and shit. So I've been enjoying the game, you know, from that standpoint. And I'm actually going to write an article about that. Because, again, it's like, man, that shit hits hard, man. Fucking Akira Toriyama, you know. So it's been good. But my feelings about the actual gameplay have not changed. It's not a good game. It's not at all. But to be fair, no Dragon Ball, except for FighterZ, which is an Arc System Wars game. I don't like any Dragon Ball game. I don't like any anime games. They all control bad to me, you know?
Look at you going back to old games.
I went to an old game, man. I went back to an old game. And here's the funny thing. Fun story. So that game came out in February 2020. You know what happened a month later, you know? And I actually reviewed it for two different publications. I reviewed it for PC Mag and for Geek.com. And here's the funny thing, you know, some insider baseball shit. I was like, because they're the same, under the same parent company. I'm like, can I review the game for two different for the same companies? They're like, as long as the copy's different, you know, what I wrote is different, go ahead. So for PC Mag, I wrote it in their house style, which is very formal, no I or nothing. And then for Geek.com, I pretty much just gushed about Dragon Ball for a fucking review. You know, I pretty much just used it. I just used it to talk about my love for Dragon Ball, you know, which is what I'm going to do tomorrow when I write about the game again. Because Tom Shot has a column every week, what we've been playing. So I was like, yo, I want to do one on Dragon Ball to talk about Toriyama. And they were like, yeah, go ahead, you know. That's what I really like about Tom's guy, man. I've never been told no for any idea that I've had when it comes to editorial, because they want that. They want your personal take on stuff, you know? Shout out to Tom's guy, man. You know, they treat me well over there. So, yes, so I've been playing Kakarot. I'm probably just going to – because I didn't finish the first game. I got up to the Frieza saga, finished that. I'm like, okay, I'm good. I can write my review now. I know what I'm in for, you know. And, Manny, I know you said that's where – to you, that's when Dragon Ball kind of ends, you know.
Yeah, it kind of ends. I mean, it's also like, you know, essentially how after that Trunks literally chops him in half in like 2 seconds. And it's like, all right, fuck this. You know, then after that, it's just all like, it's just the power creep.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah, I got up to that. So I'm going to go, because obviously it goes all the way through the Buu saga. Berserker
Guts. This probably hits the super shit too, doesn't it?
No, no super stuff. It just goes up to the original stuff. No super.
Cell game,
Buu saga, all that. Okay. One of the DLCs has GT shit, believe it or not, which is interesting. You know that like
kind of,
like,
man, I ain't touching that.
Yeah, I was like like that kid that was Boo but backwards, like Oob, like he's in. Like that's a choice, you know. but I'm not sure if the DLC's ever brought the super stuff, but the core game is the original manga, you know, from the, you know, the Saiyan arc all the way to the end of the Cell games.
Did they have the RPG people?
The RPG people?
He said, do you remember the RPG people, the one of the side quest ones where I think it's like Krillin and Bulma going into space to go to
the side stuff they added is their own side quest, not what was aired, the filler arcs basically. They didn't do the filler arcs, they just did their own filler stuff, you know, for the game. You know, that's appropriate to a video game. It's like, hey, collect this for me, beat this guy for me, you know, stuff like that. Berserker Gut says, Tony, low-key, since I've gotten older, I think I like original Dragon Ball more than Z.
You're not the only one.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too. Like, because, again, that yearning is there, man, because I haven't touched Dragon Ball at all. I want to fill that gap. So I may Carlos, I think I'm considering something that would be blasphemous for me.
Uh-oh. Subs over dubs?
No. Even more extreme. And of course, with Dragon Ball, you know it would be subs over dubs. Dragon Balls, that's one of them, man. It's got to be the subs, you know? I need those voices, man, you know? No, what would be something even more extreme for Tony?
Extreme for Tony in Dragon anime
Berserker sense, Guts just said it in the chat.
Oh,
I think
you know who it is. Is the manga guy?
I think I want to read the manga, son.
It'll go fast.
Yeah. Although, in all fairness, though, the only other manga I've read was Dragon Ball Z, so it wouldn't be that much of a stretch, you know. I'd read Akira too, but that's it. Although I think the Akira I read was like the American one, was like the art was all flipped, and I'm like, what's going on here?
You didn't read the flipped one.
Did you read
the Dark Horse one. That was the one where it was produced properly.
Yeah,
you weren't.
I read some whatever Evil Chris had, and it didn't seem very official, if you know what I mean.
Well, no, there was one that was made by Marvel years ago before any of all this stuff.
The flip one.
Those are the flipped ones, and those are in color.
Okay, yeah.
But if I
didn't read that because when I read it was in black.
You didn't read any of those.
Yeah.
Those were flipped in color.
Yeah. Illustrated Dio, what's going on, man? He goes, what's up, peeps? Glad I could catch my peeps live. Anybody hyped for Ghostbusters? I'm seeing it day one since I got to entertain from out of town. I'm actually reading the giant size manga Akira collection. Cool. Ghostbusters, the Frozen movie, I guess.
The Frozen Empire.
Yeah. I'm not watching. I don't care.
I mean, I'll go watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't hate. I thought the last one wasn't half bad. So let's see what they do with the second one.
Yeah. But yeah, so I'm considering that, but I'm like, what do I read it on? You know? Like, do I read on the Kindle? It's going to be too small, but it'll look better. Or the iPad, but it's going to have that glare. So, I don't know. Because I can't, I'm not going to buy physical. I don't have space for that. So imagine buying all those fucking volumes and shit, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Although that would be cool, you know? I'm telling you, man, if I ever move to a bigger place, I'm buying more physical shit again, you know? I'm just restricted right now. Throwdown show, not game related, but what do you think about Marvel's announcement of cutting back unnecessary movies? By fucking time, all that trash, you know, they canceled Miss Marvel 3 or whatever the fuck it was called. They canceled Ant-Man 4. But you know, and I said this on Twitter too, it doesn't change my mind. I'm done. I'm absolutely done. You know, I don't give a fuck about X-Men 97. That looks fucking terrible, too. I saw people hyped. I'm like, are you kidding me? This looks like shit, you know? So, I'm done with all this stuff. Only Segway Kings right now, man. Only superhero show I fuck with is Invincible, which returns, or has returned, I should say, which also means the Invincible podcast returns this weekend, people, you know, with your host, me, Miss Dana Abercrombie, maybe Brett, Carlos will be there, maybe Richard. So this weekend, probably Saturday evening-ish, we will return to cover the final four episodes of Invincible. So stay tuned for that. And Rich, what else is going on the Coalition?
Yes. So once again, we will be recording our next episode of Carlos's favorite show, The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live. Yes. We will be recording our next episode, episode 4, this weekend. You can check out all three of the episodes on our YouTube channel as well as the website if you haven't checked it out and you're a Walking Dead fan. Also, the last 2 days, myself, Dana, and Gary, there's been a lot of news on Power. So I don't know if you are a Power fan. I'm not talking about that shit, that program that was on PlayStation before. I'm talking about this is a different type of show. Yeah. Power on the Stars Network. Because apparently they announced that the next season of this other Power show, the show is ending. So we did talk about that today, as well as yesterday. They announced a new spinoff that they're also coming out with. So if you are interested in that, check it out at the Coalition, the website, as well as the YouTube channel. And as I mentioned before, we do have quite a bit of reviews coming next week to the website. So stay tuned for all of that.
Yeah, Rich, Barry Burton asks, when does the Fallout podcast start?
Well, that is an outstanding question, Barry. From what I understand, that is going to happen sometime in April because I think the show is in April. Dana and Gary are the ones that are in charge of that. So, you know, I don't know if anyone else is going to be on the show. Obviously, you all are welcome to be on the show as well. But we'll definitely communicate that in more details next month. So stay tuned.
That's going to be an interesting podcast because all episodes are being released at once, you know?
Exactly. So I guess it's more like a review talking about the season and what we thought about the season. I will tell you right now, I am not the biggest Fallout fan, so I might not be on that show. But, you know, the invitation is open for any of you guys as well as Brett, because I know Brett is a huge Fallout fan. So if y'all want to be on the show, we can make that happen. But Gary, for sure, is going to be on it. Gary is a fan. He'll be on that for sure. So,
oh, yeah. You already know. Yeah. I like Fallout, but I think this show is going to be trash. So I am staying away. Yeah. You know, I don't think it's going to be a good show at all. It looks like Fallout. I'll give them that. The production and all that. They got that shit right. But again, you know my feelings about modern Hollywood writers. So I'll have to wait to see on that, you know. I think it's going to be fucking terrible. Just like most TV shows and movies are nowadays, to be fair. You know, I just come at it from my standpoint. This is shit unless I'm proven, you know, otherwise, you know. And most of the time I'm right, believe it or not. All right, man. What's up?
There's a lot of good TV going around. You just don't watch it.
Yeah. I'm good. read this from Mr. Dio here. Bastard anime on Netflix is pretty lit. I also think they're remaking Berserk again. Stop it. How much torture can you put us through? You know? Don't. Leave it alone. By the way, I pre-ordered the original Berserk. That's coming back on Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah. Same here. Have it.
You got that shit on Blu-ray? Excuse me?
Yep. They did a fresh new version. you know, what are those guys? Discotech Media?
Yeah, so Discotech. They do a really good job with stuff, man. Like, when they put shit on pre-order, I'm like, get it. I haven't been disappointed since, you know?
If you guys are into, like, you know, like seeing, like, you know, getting stuff, they actually do regular streams, and they talk about all the different things that they're going to be coming out with. And they talked about that Berserk one, and they said, yeah, that one is, you know, is off of a fresh release from Japan. So it's new, you know, it's a fresh new version of it. And, you know, they obviously they got the rights to all the original voice acting, so they can put that all in. So it's good stuff.
Yeah. Berserker also pre-ordered it, Manny. So very good stuff. Berserker, good stuff. Even with that name? Yes, that makes sense, man. Let's see. What did he say? Berserk, you're crazy, bro. So yeah, Berserk, go get that. By the way, Manny, I don't know if there's this one guy who reviews like physical like DVDs. I mean, he's kind of like a younger guy with a beard and stuff. He reviewed the Alien. He reviewed like a bunch of James Cameron 4Ks that recently came out. So I had pre-ordered Alien in 4K. I saw his review. I canceled the pre-order. Because they fucking use some AI shit to make it cleaner. No! I want it the way it's supposed to be, you know? Don't clean the shit up just with fucking AI, man.
Just give me a fresh scan.
That's it.
Of it. Yeah. And that's it. Like, it doesn't need... Yeah, True Lies looks like utterly atrocious. Yeah. And a bunch of his, you know, a bunch of his other films look all fucked around with. It's like, Cam, just leave it. Leave the shit alone. Put it out. And that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll send you the link, but he reviewed all three of them, and he kind of did it in order of best to worst in terms of the reproduction. So he says the Abyss was probably the best one. It didn't do too much. Then fucking Aliens, and then True Lies, which apparently, like, it looks horrible, you know?
Yeah, it looks like painted.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
But here's the interesting thing. This is something we've talked about many, many times when it comes to reviews. You can hear a positive review and still say no, because even though he wasn't the biggest fan of the changes, he still said buy the DVDs. He still liked them, you know? And I'm like, well, I'm good. I've canceled that pre-order. I want what I remember. Don't fuck it around, man. It's like, come on, bro. I want that film grain, you know? If you guys ever seen the 4K of Predator, oh, so well done. You can see how grimy that movie is, you know? I don't clean that up.
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's like, you know, officially, as far as real films go, that the most truest 4K scan that you could ever get is from an original film element, because you're literally getting more detail as opposed to modern films, which are done at 2K and upscaled. So what does Cameron want his films to look like? He wants them to look like upscaled films?
Yeah, that's basically what the whole idea is. He wants to look like a modern film. I don't want it to look like a modern film. I want him to look at the fucking films that came out at that time, you know, just nicer looking, like, for my TV, you know. But like you said, you know, when you, like, you know, rescan the old like movies, they look, you should see more detail than what was there, you know. But they're not adding shit, you know. They're not doing all this fucking trickery, you know. So yeah, that's very disappointing, man. Very disappointing. Aliens is one of my top three movies of all time, and another fucking James Cameron movie that's been just treated terribly with home releases. Terminator, you know, I think the last good one we got was on that Steelbox DVD from like over 20 years ago, you know. And just, man, don't get me started, you know. Anyway, let's get out of here. Another good show. Make sure you follow Throwdown on Twitch and Twitter. Join the Discord, where the conversations and the rumors are always popping. Shout out to you guys for dropping that news in there. That's where I get all this stuff from. So shout out to you and the cool conversations. I jump in there every once in a while, see what's going on, you know. Good stuff. Throwdown, we're also on every podcast app on the planet. Throwdown Show, that's two words. Throwdown Space Show, you know. We are also on the internet, obviously, throwdownshow.com. You can listen to past episodes. And again, we're back on YouTube. So if you like our videos, make sure you hit like, subscribe, and hit the bell to be notified of not only when the show goes live every Thursday and Sunday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, but the random Throwdown clip that may just appear out of nowhere, you know. But yeah, for everything else, Make sure you check out the description below. Once again, I'm your host, Tony Polanco. And Two Matters joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Chris Seeley.
Hey, take care, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Try this again. Brett Murdoch.
I'm here now.
Hey, there he is. Brian Monjoma.
Hey, people.
And Richard Bailey Jr.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
All right, guys, you already know. We'll be back on Sunday. Later.
Peace.